Hello, Jean-Robert.
Oui.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Rode like the fastest 10 minutes on my bike all the way back to Queens to talk to you.
No, wow.
Yeah, my sous chef is going a little bit nuts at work, and I had to calm down. You know, the troops are trying to go against the chef again. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I know what that is. Yeah,
Yeah,
sports.
that sort of world. So, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah. I guess we'll start off by asking you, where did you start cooking and how did you get into this crazy business?
So I started cooking when I was 16 years old, and I did an apprenticeship in Lille, north of France. That's where I start.
And who were your big chefs that you worked with, the ones who showed you the ropes and everything?
I think when I start, I did only, you know, it's something I always want to do because of a. Because it's something, you know, when I grew up, my mom cooked a lot at home. We were five of us kids, so my mom had to cook for all of us. We always had lunch and dinner and breakfast at home 7 days a week. And it was, and so I always enjoy help her cooking. And on our day off of school in France, you were off on the Wednesday, so it was midweek. And we used to help her baking some things for the weekend. So it was always kind of like where I got the, well, it's a love of cooking. And so when I did my apprenticeship, it was actually a very good restaurant for the town of Lille. It was probably one of the top, it was one of the top restaurants, in Lille. It was very good to, as an apprenticeship, because it was not a small restaurant. It was quite a large restaurant. We also offer, fine dining, a lot of banquet. And also too quick, fast dining experience. So as an apprenticeship, you know, it was really good because you could see just more than just fine dining, you know. We did a lot, you know. I did walking from like an apprenticeship, you know, doing peeling vegetables and you know, for 6 months and learning how to poke chicken and very simple things. And then every 6 months, you more or less, you know, the chef taking. Show you a little bit more, give you more responsibility. The good thing also, it was the sous chef was an old chef who actually had some family problem and kind of like became a sous chef because of his, you know, couldn't take the pressure of a chef. But it was good for us because, you know, then he really take the time to teach us. Sometimes I think chefs may not have the time to teach, not because they don't want to, it's just because they are overwhelmed with office work and different things they have to do with either the owners or either with the manager. And so the sous chef was really, really next to us. I was with another colleague who was also apprenticeship. So, you know, the direction at the time was not, it was really like learning, and I guess I really enjoy every day of it. And then after that, I decided to, my parents didn't really want me to pursue the business. They want me to go back to college and quit the cooking business. They didn't know much about it, so that's one of the reasons they were not really pushing me too much to be in this business. And then 2 years later, I love it more. And then after that, I was I think one of the things, because I was from north of France and my family just moved inside of France at the time, I really want to travel. And I think one of the beautiful things I want to do part of cooking was also use the cooking job to be able to travel to place I was not fortunate to visit with my family. Due to the fact we're five of us, and you know, it was so I was able to travel a lot. My aunt, she saw my mom was living in, she still lives in south of France, and she was able to give me a job in a town near to Saint-Tropez. It's called Port-Grimaud, and it was a summer job just after I graduated from my apprenticeship. And that really showed me that, you know, the beautiful life of being a cook and living in south of France. I mean, you know, working very hard in a restaurant, work 7 days a week because it's a seasonal. It was only a summer job. So, but then in the afternoon, you know, you go and you enjoy the what people enjoy for vacation. You know, the beach, the bar, and all of that. You know, so it really make me feel like very excited about. You know, I mean, I realized my job was such an opportunity to travel in a different place, and also to meet very interesting people, and always to be in this type of vacationing. Spirit all the time, you know. And then I did what they call seasonal job. You know, I really focused on that. After the apprenticeship and after these 2 months in south of France, I did the military, 1 year in military, which was obligatory in my country. So, and I was as well, and at the time I was as well in a kitchen department, and I was able to take charge. So more or less become in charge of a kitchen in the military area. And it was good too, because Tien kind of like teach me how to. It was not about the cooking, because cooking was based on opening food can and frozen products, but teach me how to manage it a bit, because I had to manage few people, and that really helped me to manage at the younger age. And then after that, it was really when I finished and I started traveling, I went to Switzerland, same thing, and I did what they call seasonal job, where I was able to travel from 6 months and on the sea, and then 6 months in the mountain. And I went from Switzerland to Corsica, and I worked from a brigade of 10 cooks to a small family restaurant, where I was doing almost everything with an older lady and a dishwasher, and we're feeding 20 people for lunch and 30 people for dinner, and we're doing everything. I mean, it was not fine dining, but it was fresh dining, because everything was made from scratch, and including soup of the day and things like that. So I really enjoy that, and I think I really enjoy this different type of every 6 months working in a different environment, a different city, different place, always in this vacation destination. And then when I went to work in Corsica and when I work in Chamonix, I work under a chef who was a little bit more experienced, he had more experience and connection into the fine dining, and he's really the one who kind of like pushed me to stop not working for this type of restaurant, but really go to fine dining. And he's really the one who pushed me to do that. And that's where I went to work in La Baule. It was a very well-known fine dining restaurant. It was one of the largest hotels I've ever worked. We were over 125 cooks. And it was known, like in France, was everybody work lunch and dinner and everybody had one day off a week. So it was not like in America you have a morning shift and afternoon shift. It was everybody work in the buff shift. So it was always between 100 to 110 cooks at work all every day. So it was amazing. And the chef was someone who was a very, very well known chef at the time. Bring me to the restaurant. And I was because of the connection, I was able to go to the fine dining restaurant of this big hotel, and because of that, then that's really where my love of fine dining really became more important. And it was not the love of food. I mean, the love of food, I think, that's something I always like to say to people, people who join the business. It's not always about cooking caviar and truffle. I think you can be passionate about just cooking, making a nice charcuterie plate or making a nice tomato salad with fresh basil. I mean, I think the love of cooking is one thing, and the love for fine dining, it's definitely another things, and it's another stage, it's another direction. And I think I learned when I got passionate about the fine dining, it was really when you realize you work with products where you may never have a chance to try them. You may not even know the test, and you start testing them, and then you start having this discovery of using products who are definitely expensive, and then you're doing limited amount of people. But then it's so much more detail into one plate, and because of the cost of the products, and because of what the cost of the plate will be, and that's really where I start. I love it. I mean, I was working in this small dining, fine dining restaurant in this big hotel, and it was limited menu, and we did lunch and dinner, and it was where I really learned. We were very lucky too, because we never did big mise en place. It was we came to work at 10 o'clock every day, and then from 10 to 2:30, and then from 5:30 until 11:30 every day. But then one thing, it was amazing. It was probably, even if it was only a seasonal job, it was probably one of the best food we probably execute, because all of the mise en place was done by the main kitchen. And then we came in the morning, and then you went to pick up the fish from the fish cutter or the meat cutter, and they give you the best product they had. I mean, and the one you had the day before, if you had a piece of snapper from the day before, he went to the big restaurant to be used in the bouillabaisse or be used in the special of the day downstairs, and you had everything was fresh cut every day. I never did the stock. I mean, I went to the stock guys who was doing all of the stock and the sausage, and you get all of the base. So we brought the base upstairs, we bought the protein, and the only thing we did is doing the small garnish and finishing the sauce upstairs. So it was a very, it was probably the best food we were able to cook because of the circumstances. I never peeled a carrot for 6 months. I died the carrot because the carrot was peeled by somebody else downstairs, you know. And same thing with an onion. And I think that was kind of an amazing experience. And then from there, the same thing. The chef sent me to one-star Michelin in Monte Carlo. And that's the same thing. I was lucky too there because Monte Carlo is another different. And I was in my early 20s at the time still, and it was very interesting in Monte Carlo because Monte Carlo, this restaurant belonged to the Société des Bains de Mer, SBM, who is an association of businesses who's been owned by the government of Monte Carlo, by the prince. So one of the main important things was the staff were very well taken care of, very well paid, got an extra 13 months pay, it was very well, people were very well treated, and I think that's the way Monte Carlo run their business. They pay people well and then they take care of them well. And it's not like in France they didn't do that, but in France was, you could not make the money. It was probably, 15% more money than if you would work in France. And you have way more social advantages than ever you would have in France if you work for a privately owned restaurant, regardless. If you work for a big factory, a big catering, you may have the same things. But that was the nice thing of it is like most of the cooks who were working in this restaurant, this one-star Michelin, were older cooks. They were in their late 20s, early 30s, and some of them could be probably cooks who could be chefs somewhere, but their situation, family situation, and they had 2 days off a week. And I remember we had 7 weeks vacation a year. In France, it was only 4 weeks at the time, So they had family, and for them, the family matters was more important, more than their careers, So when I came in my early 20s, I think I was 22 years old, I was working with people who were between 28 and 33 years old, and they didn't want to move up. They didn't want to leave. They didn't want to look for another job because they were making more money than some chef were making in France and having more time off and be able to spend time with their family. So that was good because the chef really, and it's not like they were not ambitious, but they were definitely more, they liked the routine of the job. And I think the chef liked to hire young people who didn't want that. They want to be there to create good food, to follow his goal. And then that was really taking under the chef, who was very difficult to work with, but really teach me, and he gave me a job actually of someone. He gave me an associate job at the time, and I did the fish and the meat. And he really gave me a lot of challenge. And at the time, I remember, it was very hard, and I was complaining sometimes because I think I was the youngest one. I was the one who always got yelled at. I was the one who got the less pay, and I was the one always, every time he wants something, he came to me and asked me to do it. When the other cooks, he kind of leave them alone and never really yell at them because, they were kind of. But at the time, I remember to be a little frustrated with it. But later on, I realized it was best thing can happen to me, and I understand him as a chef because he realized with the other team members, they didn't have really a real goal. The goal was, they want to do their job very well, the best they can, but there was no goal for them for the future besides, enjoying the system of Monte Carlo. And then, so I worked there for over 6 months in the winter time, and it was, of course, beautiful life to live in Monte Carlo. And then I went to work for three-star Michelin, and that was my goal after that because I realized I was, good at what I was doing, and I realized, it's really something I want to do. And so I went to work for a place called La Bonne Auberge in Antibes, so it was not far away. It was still inside of France. And I was different. It was kind of funny because, you're 23 years old, 24 years old, and you've been working since you're 16, and then the first thing you go to work in this type of restaurant, the first thing they teach you is like, we are going to teach you how to peel asparagus, and you feel like you don't know anything. And, and I'm always someone who always never overreact when it comes to that. I always did it, and always try to learn as much as I can. And of course was a famous, very famous chef. Rostand, where his son is still alive, the dad passed away. His son has many restaurants in Paris, and I started working with them. And I was, and because of my experience in the past of working by myself, of working in a smaller kitchen, of working with different products where it was not fine dining, but it was, more covered to feel. I think my speed was way much better than some other cooks who only work in fine dining, and I think, I became very quickly first chef de partie because I was really running the place, I was really doing everything the best way, and I was really fast at it, et cetera, et cetera. So I basically, and then the chef, the chef left, his son took over. And then when the chef took, when the son took over, then the son left to open a restaurant in Caribbean. And then I became more or less, I was not the sous chef, but I was more or less the lead cook at the time for almost a year. Because it was a winter time, and winter time in south of France, and in fine dining, it was not very busy during the week, very busy during the weekend and Sunday lunch. But, and so I was more or less the one who went to the market and helped Mr. Rostand to really, like, you know, run the kitchen, you know. That, without having any title, it was just, you know, because I've been there for a year and a half with him. And then he sent me to Caribbean after that, and then he sent me to New York. And so in Caribbean, I was, same thing, I was running the fish station. And I was like the sous chef, you know. It was a chef and two sous chefs at the time, and it was young too. But you know, the difficulty it was probably English. I mean, my English was not so good, and I had to speak English with the local and try to understand. I mean, of course, the beauty was living in Caribbean and doing very good food in Caribbean. I mean, it was definitely, and I think still today, it's one of the best restaurants in Caribbean when you come to fine dining, because it's like, you know, exactly the way a three-star Michelin will run in France, but in the middle of the business ended. And then sent me to New York, and then New York was when I went to New York, was my New York things was a little bit different, because I left to take a job in a restaurant. New York was quite an interesting experience for a very short time, but I really learned how to see what an American kitchen look like. But this experience didn't really went too far, and then I went to work for the Plaza Atene when the same people I've been working with for 4 years before that, then they hired me to be a sous chef at the Plaza Atene. You know, I was already in New York. My English was not so bad at the time, and tried to help the chef to run the Plaza Atene.
You were in New York. What was the difference with France and New York? What was your first impression? I mean, pretty primitive, I think, for you then, no?
I mean, you know, it's, I think what was, you know, it was, what was different is definitely, you know, I think the difference between, you know, running and at the time running a restaurant in France next to a restaurant in America, it was actually maybe the understand, you know, the products. I mean, the products were probably the most, I will not say the most difficult things to get, but definitely not everybody were aware about what they were, you know. And then I think when you're in France, I think when you work with the European people, I mean, you work with the young, I mean, European cooks, he's going to know what a sardine is, going to know what a walleye is, going to know what a salmon is, because he grew up with it, you know what I mean? It's, I think in America, you know, when at the time, you had, you know, people may not even know the difference between a veal and a pork, you know, and I don't think you can put that against these people. It's just like they don't grow up with it, because that's not what, and I didn't even understand that in New York. I think I understand even better when I came to America, the true America, when I moved to Cincinnati, because in New York, I think people are, and that's a lot of questions I may have in New York City. I think I answered them when I moved to Cincinnati after being in Cincinnati for a few years, because I'm understanding what people go to, you know, what, you know, the way people grow up, the way people eat. And it was not like because they don't have no passion. It's just because they didn't have enough knowledge on food, you know, and because, you know, it's in France, it's completely different, you know. I mean, it's, and I think it's changing actually in America strongly this past few years, because I think the passion for food is actually, it's been moving in the right. It's been moving in America more than actually people could have expected 25 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I always tell my mom, she reminds me when we first moved to America, that she couldn't even find a shallot or a leek in the market, and she was like so distressed for her being, you know, from Provence. It was like, oh my God, what am I going to do for the kids, you know? So that was her first really difficult thing, was to go shopping in American supermarkets. Totally different. What is it like for you in Cincinnati? I mean, New York is a pretty jaded food sort of town, and you're pretty much the man on the mountain in Cincinnati. So what is it that making you the empire builder?
I don't know about all of that, but I mean, no, I mean, definitely. I mean, you know, when we moved to Cincinnati, it was definitely not something planned. I mean, after being at the Plaza Atene and then, you know, taking over the job of a lead chef and working still with the family, Waston family, who were running the restaurant from France, it was a good experience. I think my only problem, I mean, my disappointment for, you know, after looking back, is like I didn't realize how big of a job I had, I think, at the time. You know, I never realized how big of a job it was to be the the resident chef of the Plaza Athénée. I mean, you know, I just did my job, and I was following up a little bit, and I think it was because I was probably a little bit too young. Not because I don't think I was too young to take the position, but I think it was too young to look at the big pictures, you know. Sure. I think I was too much in a dining, you know, too much in a kitchen, not being enough in the dining room, not play the game with some of the press or critique or things like that, you know. And that was I think it was because I was very young. And so, you know, when I left and I opened La Gauloise with Charlie Palmer, that was another experience. And then when I moved to Cincinnati, it was really, I mean, it was in 1993, the economy was very poor in New York City. And it was very hard to find a job, and I felt, of course, a little disappointing that I left the Plaza Athénée. I could have probably stayed a few more years, but, you know, you never know. I mean, that's, you know, c'est la vie. But yeah. Moved to Cincinnati, and talking about the Maisonette was a very good experience because Maisonette, I took the job just because Maisonette was one of the longest five-star restaurants in the nation, all run by the same family for over 70 years, with many dead generation. The chef was, I was only the fifth chef. You know, in 50 years, I mean, 40 years of existence, and I think, you know, that was, to me, that I was a four chef, actually, and I think the chef who was there before, when I took over, it was there for 29 years, and I think, to me, I had a lot to say about a little bit of running the restaurant, very similar to European way, you know, and I think when you're a chef and you work for some, you know, someone in early 30s, and then you're still working for them and you retire, have a lot to say about the family who own the place, you know. So I felt good about that. But it also, what the challenge was also, the challenge was more based on a restaurant, was really working. And then the food was really, the food was definitely good food, but it was definitely old-fashioned food. I mean, it was what people did in the 70s. And in 1994, it was time to really, like, give them a little bit more of a different style of cooking, even if it was still French, but not so much traditional, you know, no more wood, no more Bermanier, no more, you know, flour band for the fish and the veal, and, you know, that was when I thought, I was like, wow, you know, to me, it was even before my apprenticeship style of cooking, you know. So it was a good challenge, and in some way, it was an easy challenge, I have to say, because the Cincinnatians were ready for that, you know, they were ready to see something different, they were ready to see what every other chef did in other town, you know, so it was to the customer, I think the challenge was actually easy because they enjoyed the freshness of the vegetables. I mean, it was the same vegetable everywhere, regardless if you order a beef or a fish or whatever, you had the same garnish. Like, that was all, the only change was the sauce. And so when I started putting, you know, every garnish to every plate, you know, that was something new for Cincinnati, but it was not something new in New York or even in Europe, you know, which is, you know, was going on for 20 years. So it was, I think it was easy, but the most difficult thing was to teach the cooks. I came by myself. Nobody really know me. They've been working with the chef who was in his mid-60s, who was retiring. And then here they have a young French guy who's 33 years old. And that was a big challenge. You know, that was a challenge. It was an interesting challenge. And I had to put a team together. And, of course, it was very hard. It's not like in New York when you can have some employee from Europe who are available, very few, you know, you don't find them in Cincinnati. And so I talked to people I had, and some of them left because they don't agree with my way of my things had changed. And then I got, you know, some new people who really understand what I was there for. And so the welcoming in Cincinnati was definitely there when I did that. And we were, you know, the restaurant was powerful. The restaurant was busy. I mean, you know, it was, I think we did the, you know, we did the job. And, of course, I stayed there a little bit longer than I want to. I mean, definitely, we're not planning to be in Cincinnati and stay there more than 3 to 5 years. Of course, because of the position, I would have not stayed less than 3 years. But then, of course, you know, after staying there for 5 years, 6 years, and that was the reason, was not because of Cincinnati, also it was of one other different family reason. But and then I decided to reopen. Cincinnati had 3 5-star restaurants in the late 70s. It was quite amazing, I think, when it was 15 restaurants. It was 12 five-star restaurants in America, and 3 of them were in Cincinnati. It was more in Cincinnati than it was in New York City. And it was amazing. So one of them, actually, it was for sale, called Pickles. Was one of the 5-star at the 8 days of Cincinnati fine dining. And then the restaurant became a bistro, became a cafe, then became a barbecue place. And then at the time I was able to, in 2000, 2001, I was able to, I just walked in front of it, and I realized the restaurant was going down, and I kind of like put my nose into it. Always wanted to have my own restaurant, but I was looking of not maybe moving back to New York City, but at least going to around Connecticut, but could definitely go back on the East Coast. And then, when I saw this location could be for sale, I kind of like asked a few friends, a few people I know were able to help me. And then, no, today's the story. I mean, we're able to take it over and to reopen as a fine dining. And of course, now we're going to celebrate 5 years in August. And I think, you know, sometimes I'm disappointing. I did it because, not because of what I do on a daily basis when it comes to the cooking. Sometimes I'm disappointed because it's Cincinnati and having my wife being from Germany and me being from France, I have no reason to be here. But if I look in 5 years, you know, later on, you know, I walk down the street and I always want to open a French bistro. I collect a lot of junk and then I decide to open a bistro from the right location at the time downtown. And downtown was not an easy situation in Cincinnati. I mean, like many little towns in America, everybody deserts the downtown to live in a suburb. Of course, today, 5 years later, it looked a new revolution and resurrection of downtown. And not only Cincinnati, I think it's like that everywhere in America, you know, besides, of course, the 10 biggest cities in America. I'm talking about, you know, the city from like the 15 to the 30 rank, you know. It's a new resurrection everywhere of like coming back and live more downtown, you know. And so, you know, of course, Bistro was open. You know, we are in 3 years. Then it was a French-Vietnamese restaurant called Faux Prairie. It was a relationship I had with a restaurant, the local Dai Vietnamese. And then I decided to open something, and you know, we moved the location, but still existed. Open for 3 years. It will be 3 years in August. And then just open Green Up Cafe, which is a bakery. It's a French bakery, and it's like a little cafe where you can have breakfast, lunch, dinner, and brunch. It's been very popular. It's very close to downtown. So all of this, you know, these four restaurants, very different from another. They all have the same connection. It's me, and the same connection is we try to do a little bit of a French spirit. French spirit in every restaurant, you know, and because of me being from France. I don't have many foreigners in the whole group, and I have one young Frenchman, I mean two French people working for me. One is dad who came and moved to Cincinnati to work for a huge French company in Cincinnati, and then the other one is my French pastry chef at the Green Up Cafe. And now, of course, more opportunities are coming. I'm having few. I'm opening a catering. Associate myself with a big Cincinnati attraction, which is like the big aquarium. And so things are doing, but I think definitely the difference is in Cincinnati next to New York is definitely, you know, Cincinnati is still a very quiet city. You know, it's a very quiet town. And, you know, I don't mind sometimes. I mean, it doesn't mean like it's a quiet town. Doesn't mean I work less than a chef in New York City. We still put as many hours, and that's something I like. And sometimes I think that's my aggravation in America a little bit. It's kind of a little aggravation I think I've received. Being in the Midwest, sometimes you don't really get any recognition from the national press or look of what's going on. You know, it's always Chicago. I mean, it's always the seventh biggest city in America, and then it's place like New Orleans because it's an attraction for vacation, you know. And Cincinnati is not really a vacation destination either. I mean, it's a nice middle top of America and heart of the Midwest, and it's, you know, you have the four seasons, so it's quite nice for the cooking system because, you know, we get excited about the tomato who are ready to come, and they will be have the best tomato in the country. They will be in Cincinnati area, in the Midwest, and then after that, we'll be excited for the pumpkin during the winter, you know, during the fall, and then, and you know, I get the same product, and you know, when it comes to the products who are not growing in Cincinnati or who are actually coming from a country out of America, I'm getting the same product than any restaurant in New York City. You know, it's not like because we are in Cincinnati, we pay less for it, or, sure. You know, it's exactly the same price, but then the price we can charge our customer are definitely not the same. You know, So it's sometimes I think it's people think it's easier to be here because they may think people may not know so much about food, or we may not work as hard, or life is easier because we don't have no traffic, but you actually work as hard, and sometimes it's harder because sometimes the customer are not necessary. The customer are there, but it's not like the mass like in New York City. I mean, one thing I like to mention many times, every time I have an explanation about a restaurant, I hate when customer comes, oh, yeah, it's 9 o'clock on Monday night, nobody's there anymore, Cincinnati's dead, you know. And, you know, and I turn around, and after living in New York, I say, you know, but the New Yorkers are not the one who are going to be out at 9:30 on Monday night, you know. People who are going to be out on Monday night at 9:30 in New York City are going to be the people who travel. And that it's after either they had meeting or either they went to visit many tourist attraction. When they've done late afternoon, they go back to their bed, you know, to their hotel. They they take a break a little bit, and then they're ready to go out again, because I'm not going to go to bed early in the hotel room, or they're not going to watch a movie, you know, in their hotel room, you know. Then the next day they don't have to wake up and walk the dogs or take care of the kids to go to school, you know. So, yeah. And that's one thing always make me laugh when people compare, when we compare New York, I mean Cincinnati to New York, it's like two different things. And if we will have more travel, I think our restaurant industry will definitely be more blooming than it is during the week. What's next, you know, and that's a frustration I can get sometimes, you know, because of, and that, like we mentioned, the press. I mean, it's the press are not looking really, I mean, you know, and it's not even about our restaurant group, you know, it's about everybody. I mean, for a lot of young chefs, after being here for over 13 years, a lot of young chefs work with me on the Meet the Maisonette, and they were talented young cooks, and they went on their own. They became chefs, sous chefs, either chef owners or just working for a restaurant, and they all do a very good job. A lot of them are doing an unbelievable job, and everybody's tried for the best. I mean, they don't strive for not doing a good job because we are in Cincinnati. I mean, they strive for the best, and I think one of the best comments we can all receive is when some Cincinnatians travel, and they come back and they realize, you know, hey, you know, what they have here is not so bad after all, you know.
Yeah, the grass is nose greener, you know, on the other side.
That's definitely true.
Well, I always remember that when I first met you, you were the first chef, at least a French chef, or any chef for that matter, who was able to communicate with his cooks about how it is to be, you know, how to work in the kitchen and to give that person responsibility and to make that person think for themselves. I mean, I remember the first day I worked with you, and everybody wanted to come and help me bone out some Dover sole, and I was really in the weeds, and you said, no, no, let him go. He'll do it. He'll do it. And I was like, oh, my God. So, but I always remember that you were a lot different than some of the guys I worked with later on and before that, so I appreciated that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah.
But I think it's, you know.
Yeah, no, it's important to, you know, let the person see what they're doing. Otherwise, they'll never learn anything.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it's, you know, I think in our business, I think the way of learning is a different. I mean, in our business, I think by let the people discover also and give them the right direction. That's the way what a chef has to do. You know, I mean, that's because, you know, without your team, a chef cannot be a chef. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I mean, the chef, you don't call yourself a chef if you're by yourself in the kitchen cooking, you know, and then you become the cook, you know. And as soon as you put a title of as a chef in you, then it's definitely like, you know, you do have a group of people who will help you to reach your goal, you know, and the only way you can reach your goal is really having them understand what you try to accomplish and having them enjoying when they are doing it too. You know,
right.
I think it's extremely important. I mean, now I always like to compare myself. Of course, now I'm becoming a little bit older. I'm 45 years old, so it's not like the team, the brigade is, you know, a few years younger than I am. No, it's a different of generation. But one thing I always analyze very well. I always do believe. Chef should be like coach of college basketball team. I mean, they really, you know, they should be on the sideline when the game is playing, and they have to get mad, they have to get pushy, they have to tell them the team can do better. They need to do that. You know, if you see a coach sitting in this set and not really move during the whole game, I don't expect the team to win. You know, and if the team win, it's just because the coach may not be so good, but the players are good, you know. And I think if you see the coach be on the sideline and yelling and pushing his cook and tell them they are not so good and they should be better, and because he wants the team to win, and the team win, then everybody's good. The coach is happy, the team, the young kids are happy, and that's exactly the way I look at myself, you know. Even at Big Girls with my brigade and also at the other restaurant when I let some young chef take over the lead, I mean. And that's something that was good for me to open another restaurant, because that's where I realize I have to let it go sometime too. You know, it's a way to be able to trust someone who's going to do the job for you, and you know you cannot do anything about it, and you had to trust him, you had to let him do it, you know. And that was a good thing for me.
Well, as a transition as an owner now, and because you have so many businesses, how hard is it to instill into somebody, you know, what it is that you want from them in terms of food? I mean, food is really subjective to a person's style or personality, so if you have different places, how is it going to be?
Yeah, but I think. I mean, when I look at food, I think food is also a different. Food is also, of course, it's kind of like hard to say that. But one way I think food, I like to say sometimes, you know, if after time to explain it. I like to say food is overrated. And when I say that, I'm not saying good food is overrated. I'm not saying, but when I say food is overrated in one way is where I think we can all, go tomorrow in some place in different country, Italy or Napa Valley or South of France, and drive and then stop at this little bakery, buy your baguette, buy your, some butter, stop at a little charcuterie, buy some saucisson and some ham, and then put a piece of cheese, and then stop by, and then have a little snack on the country feel, and we could think it's going to be one of the best meals we ever had.
That's true.
And it's nothing to do with no brigade who are cooking everything. It's nothing something was going to blow you away. It's not going to be a spice coming from a country you've never been or you don't have no idea what it is. It's just going to be something you're used to and you know exactly what it is, but it could be one of the best meal you can have.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I think, you know, it's really something I think with a restaurant. Sometimes I think some chef have a tendency to oversee the fact, like, you know, it can be a very simple food, and that's what I would look with a bistro. Or at the cafe, it can be very simple food, but if it's made with care and if it's made with the right products and it's made with care, then it's a winning dish, regardless if it's going to be a $3.50 cup of a seasonal vegetable soup, or if it's going to do a soup made with truffle and some expensive crab meat, you know. And I think that's where one thing where I think what we are bringing today in the restaurant business is really what I think one thing we're bringing experience to the people. I mean, I think it's an experience, and I think it's not an experience. It's one thing also I realize I don't really care much to educate customers. I'm here to educate the cooks. I'm here to educate the people who work, and I'm here to educate myself at the same time, you know. But I don't really like to be able to say, oh, I'm here to educate a customer. No, we are not here to educate the customer. We are here to please them, and we are here to give them an experience they will either remember because it's going to be something they could not afford or they could not do as many times than some of them may be able to do it, or just going to be a memorable evening because they're going to be sitting with their best friend or their family member, or, you know, and they will be able to enjoy a wonderful glass of wine and wonderful food. And that would not be necessarily the focus. The focus would be their friend, the tables, and then it would be everything together, you know.
Yeah. What's your food like now? I mean, I remember working with you back in New York and you know, coming from France. What's the single most memory of food that you have that you're still, you know, putting into your cuisine today? I mean, I always remember things of when I grew up in, in Europe, when I was a child, there's like a certain flavor or a certain thing that I always loved, and I always keep that. That quality or something when I'm
cooking. Yeah, I mean definitely like more for pickle more than from anywhere, more for the fine dining. I think one of my favorite thing is really put a strong application to vegetables. You know, I think to me that's one of the because the vegetables are definitely going to give you the sense of the weather, the sense of the time we are in, the sense of, you know, the sense of the month we are living, you know. And I think, you know, and I think that's really where I think I have a strong belief in vegetables and how vegetable, and it's not, I don't do vegetarian food. It's, I mean, I will do it for vegetarian, but I think the vision into the vegetables, And that's what's important. I mean, a piece of snapper can definitely be better during the run season of snapper, but, you know, you can eat the snapper all year round, you know, and by able to mix some very strong, important flavor from the season, that's going to really make the dish completely change different destination, you know. And I think if I look at what I've been doing now, I mean, I've been creating money for quite a while now, and I'm always, proud of myself a little bit because I'm proud and more amazed, and I will be able to use, you know, it's going to be the salmon or it's going to be a monkfish, but I'm going to be able to bring a different flavor to them, you know. Okay. I'm someone who don't change a menu often. I believe in, I'm one of the chefs who do believe in the seasonal menu. By following a menu for 3 months would be definitely the right thing to do. And one because, and then you really can come to a perfection of the dish, and then you can really do it very well. I mean, I think chefs would change their menu on a daily basis. I think the only way you could really do it if you really have a small menu, you know, then you really have a small menu, and then you only offer a few main courses and a few appetizers, then that's the only way you could do it. But if you start offering a lot of variety of dishes, I think the direction is really to focus on the seasonal products and try to keep it for for the time they would be available. And so that's, you know, when I think, and I think one thing has been very interesting, I think, in the style of cooking I have is I'm from north of France, so I grew up with a cream, I grew up with butter, I grew up with like earthy vegetables, and then I think they would be they are really needed during the winter and the fall time. But then I walk most of my working career was in south of France, where it was a discovery of the basil, discovery on the extra virgin olive oil, you know, and I think that has been close to my roots, not because I grew up there, but because I learned during my learning time in south of France. And I think I'm able to mix these two things together and following the season. You know, I mean, I'm always amazed when I see tomatoes somewhere on the menu of a fine dining restaurant in the middle of the winter. I mean, it should not be anywhere. You know, the only tomato products a chef should use is tomato paste, you know.
Yeah, or berries.
You know, berries, yeah.
And how would you describe your cooking now? Is it American or is it French or what?
I would like to use the word more contemporary of today. You know, I mean, and contemporary, I should be careful now because we are entering a new cooking style. You know, because of my generation, I'm staying in what I know. I'm staying with the contemporary French cooking, with an American touch, I will say. You know, because
right.
Definitely, I think the American. When people say, you know, I think the American eat exactly the same way that the French people could eat. You know, I think it's a difference. I think the difference, and I think it's such a huge difference for us, for when you live in America and when you live in Europe, you know, in France. The country is so much bigger in this country, and that's something we don't really realize that. You know, I mean, you know, when you live in France, I think one of the most beautiful, well, I always like to say one of the reasons France is is one of the top countries for food is not because the French people can cook better than any other people. It's just because the availability of the products everywhere. And then, you know, it's a little bit smaller than two big states in America, and you have everything what America have in over 50 states. You know, I mean, we have the, you know, you have the cold sea, you have the warm sea, you have the hot weather, you have the cold weather. I mean, you have the mountain, you have all of that. I mean, you know, and all of that in a space shorter than two states in America. So when you get some products from California, the sad part of it, you cannot. They were not picked 3 hours ago. They were not picked 5 hours ago. They were not picked a night before. They were, you know, they were picked 3 days before, and the time they travel to you, they are 5 days old. You know, and I don't think it's because the farmers doesn't really do care about this product, just because that's because of the size of the country. You know, I mean, if you get some lobster from, you know, you get the lobster from Maine. I mean, you know, it's you know, it's. I mean, today the good thing with delivery is going to be better, but you know, you cannot drive a car and go to Maine and then come back to Cincinnati the same night and cook it. You know, you can go to Brittany, get your lobster in the morning, and you can put them on the table in Paris at nighttime, you know, because it's such a smaller country. You know, and I think because of that, I think French cooking is definitely higher when it comes to fine dining because it's regional too. Every time you do 200 miles, I mean, less than 200 miles in France, you discover another form of eating, another form of living, another form of lifestyle, you know. In America.
What I love about France is that, you know, I haven't really had the opportunity to go to the finest dining restaurants because the dollar is so bad, but the contemporary food I haven't really tried. But, I mean, just the simplicity of being able to go to a boulangerie or a pâtisserie or right around the corner and virtually every place you go, there's something you can eat. And even in the least likely places where you'd go, oh, boy, this is going to be really crap. You go, wow, I had a really great hamburger there that I've never had, like, in the States before. You know, it's just so perfect. You go, wow.
I don't know if hamburger is the right dish to pick, but...
Yeah, well, no, but...
I was in France not too long ago, and we went to the Bordeaux area, and we went to this little tiny town of Pauillac, and we found this little restaurant. It was really there for the, you know, that we call the blue collar, you know. I mean, it was there for the people who, you know, they were all of the workers, you know, and it was a little menu for 10 euro, you know, and...
Yeah.
I went there inside, and they were extremely busy. It was like a little, it's like a true cafe. It's not a cafe it was a true cafe. It was a true, you know, it was a true little bar with some food, and it was, you know, the owners behind the bar, his wife kind of like did a little bit of everything, and then the waitress, and they were feeding 70 people.
Huh.
And they were running like crazy, but, you know, we talked this two menu, and it was probably same thing. It was an unbelievable meal because it was like, you know, soup made with fresh vegetables, and you can, I mean, it was not pretty, but it was very tasty. And then, you know, they give you this, you know, so it was a bowl of soup, and they put a big soup here in a table, and then you can just serve yourself as much as you want to.
What is your take on food in France now? I mean, how different is it from when you were cooking there?
No, I mean, I think actually it's kind of an interesting because it's really a kind of a you know, you go to one direction and then you come back to the other one. You know, it's always been like that. And I think today, one thing is very important. I mean, today things have changed. I mean, one thing I'm disappointing in France is that casually, you know, and I think it's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle of people. I think if you go to larger metropole in France, you will realize the restaurants are not as good as they used to be, I will say, because it will be run more by chain restaurant because the couples are working and the couple are busy. You know, they both don't have the time to really. The man doesn't have really the time anymore to really go to the market every day. Or I mean, they still go to the bakery every morning because that's something in France will always be like that. But I think it's become different, and you see a lot of more chain, you know, restaurant.
So when it's become Americanized.
Americanized. And when you go to the countryside, I think you can still feel that because time is a bit. Time have not changed for 25 years. I don't think time have changed. I mean, when I went to Bordeaux, I mean, I didn't feel the same pressure than in Avignon. When every time I go to Avignon, I mean, when I went to visit my family in Avignon, we want to go and eat at 8:30 on the Thursday night. I mean, the only place it was able to go and who was busy, it was a new chain. You know, it was a new chain and was near the expressway, was near to all of the inexpensive hotel where all of the traveler can stay. You know, and it was a typical. What happened to America 25 years ago? It was exactly the same type of direction, you know. And that's, you know, but when it comes to the food, I think the food in fine dining, I mean, the fine dining in France became way more expensive than it used to be, you know, and I think it's a huge difference because of the selection of the products. And, I mean, last time I went there, I did a Pierre Gagnaire in Paris. And this has been a while ago. And it was, you know, two of us for lunch. It was an unbelievable meal, but two of us for lunch was extremely expensive. I mean, it was over 250 euro per person. And that was already over 4 years ago, you know. And then, so, you know, you definitely realize that. I mean, you know, the fine dining in America is not as expensive than it is in Europe.
Yeah.
But then, the bistro dining is definitely, I think, is cheaper in Europe and it's actually better, you know, because of they can still use some of the very good products and local products. You know, in America, so when you talk about a cheaper dining experience, you see the can opener in the back and then you see some frozen products ready to be cooked, you know.
Yeah, well, we were in Paris last summer with my mom, and she hadn't been back in 30 years, so, you know, we did a little picnic on the Seine first, and then we went to a little restaurant the last night before we went back to see my sister in Switzerland, and we had a great dinner at this local place, and I was like, really, I said, wow, this is really fantastic. The service was just spot on, and just, I said, the food tastes different here, too. I don't know, maybe I'm losing my mind. I'm so used to New York, you know, where, you know, there's this really great restaurant downtown, but it's so expensive to eat here too. So,
and it's a contest. I mean, I mean, the thing, you know, one thing in Europe, well, I hope it will not change even with the, you know, it's this new form of cooking, you know, with the. But I think that's not going to affect really like country like France or even any country in Europe because we're still very rural and we still very it's simple cooking, you know, and I've not been to Spain for quite a long time, but I'm sure in Spain it must be the same thing. I mean, it's a different type of product than you will find in North of France or in Switzerland or in Belgium, but it's still the same thing. You can probably go to a nice little Spanish little restaurant in the countryside and, you know, eat some wonderful ham and eat some wonderful saffron rice and, I mean, some very simple, some simplicity into the dish, and you will find that wonderful because you know the freshness and you know the origin of the products, and I think that will always stay there all the time. I mean, I think that's something that will never go away. You know?
And how do you keep the balance now that you have so many businesses running? I mean, do you kind of lose out by not being able to stay in the kitchen as much as you want, or do you have?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I try to be very strong on the my day really starts. You know, I mean, since we do have still a young daughter, my day starts. She's just in 3, and it's really try to spend some time with her in the morning, a little bit. And then it's really like try to visit some of the restaurant and then try to talk to the chef, try to see what's going on. And most of the time, you know, my need is kind of like overseas situation and really, and of kind of like analyzing or finalizing a difficult situation. So it's not really me being in the kitchen and need them to, you know, like butchering fish or butchering anything if they, because they have a big party. They all run on their own, and they all like, so my vision is really like oversee everything and be there for difficulty or things well they need to be resolved. And then when it comes to Pigalle, you know, then that's where I am at night time. And of course I, for the first time, I mean, after 5 years, it's not a long time, but still, I put a young man who is a chef de cuisine since this last fall, and I guess his role is really to be taking over, and I, you know, he's not doing necessarily all of the dishes. I mean, I'm still very involved with that. I'm still doing a lot of cooking for VIP, and I'm here every night, you know. But allow me to be able to come late afternoon and be able to kind of like, you know, have a quick meeting with him and then still test the sauce before service, still look at the dishes to go away, you know, and be able to be there with the customer. I mean, Pigalle will always where I will be, and that's where I will spend my time. I mean, I like to visit some. I mean, it's kind of an interesting, because Faux Paris has been open for 3 years, it will be 3 years in August, and I went to eat for the first time last week. We opened a restaurant for 10 days. At the flower show, it was a big undertaking, but it was also a lot of fun, because opening a 150-seat restaurant in the flower show, it was a show for only 9 days, was a lot of fun. And so I walked there every morning, and it was actually more spending time in the dining room, talking to the guests and joking with them and talking to them about what I do and what we try to accomplish. And so I went to eat at Faux Paris for the first time, and actually it was very uncomfortable for me to actually eat in one of my restaurants at 8 o'clock at night time and enjoying a meal with a friend of mine who actually came to visit me from France. But I felt like my need was not necessary this night at Pigalle, and then I went there. But I felt uncomfortable. So, and I liked the fact I enjoyed not feeling comfortable, because I mean, you know, I like to be in the kitchen wearing the white jacket and make sure, you know, things are going to be done well.
What's the future hold for Jean Aubert? Is he going to open even more places?
I mean, the future is, you know, the future is definitely, the future is, should be in the right. I mean, I think it's kind of more you do, more you want to do, you know, and if you want something to be done, like the busy guys, you know, and I think it's essentially this kind of way everything is going. I mean, we have, we're going to open another place probably by the end of the year in another location. It's going to be, but everything is never going to be above Pigalle. Everything's going to be on the Pigalle, you know, so Pigalle will be the fine dining, that's where I will be, and then the rest will just be a different, follow-up, like the new place would be very similar to the cafe, and I think would be a need to move that to another direction, to another location, and I think so taking over an old building and in an area where Cincinnati is having some change. I mean, it's been a bad area for many, many years, and that's the city is kind of like taking the lead of, like, you know, try to make this area better. So I also feel like by opening a little business there, opening the other French cafe, it's also, I'm part of the city, try to make the city better. So it's not only for, it's not only a lucrative move, because, you know, in the restaurant business, it's still, I'm still looking for the right things, but it's more so to be part of the city and, you know, enjoying myself at the same time and be part of the community. Yeah. So be able to help them to open this, you know, this fourth restaurant was more, it's more a wish for the location and for the area and for this, what the city tried to do, more than a personal need.
And with you opening so many businesses, are there more people that are like looking at you and saying, "Hey, I could do a business here too. This is working out."
Yeah, I mean, of course, definitely. I mean, you know, I think that's one thing is wonderful, and it's not so wonderful is like, you know, we are looking at a business where competition never stops. You know, and it's the same thing in New York. I mean, you know, I like to talk about Daniel Bully. I mean, I always think of Daniel. I mean, Daniel was one of the first, probably one of the first. Daniel and Jean-Georges were probably one of the first chef of the new generation, of my generation in America, to really come and really make something very different and, you know, take even more the European style of cooking and bring it to America and never lose American flavor into it too. But, and, you know, Daniel and Jean-Georges opened the two restaurants probably, 15 years ago,
yeah.
You know, 13, 15 years ago. And now when I see every time a new chef from France or from somewhere else want to do the same thing, you know. But that's what it is. I mean, but I think the good thing with competition, it's good. Competition is good because, you know, and competition keep you going, keep you doing,
sure.
Keep you doing the, you know, then push you to do the right thing and push you to be focused. And I think it's fun for me to see Cincinnati and, you know, so many Cincinnati. And I think Cincinnati have changed. I mean, of course, the sad part of Cincinnati today was definitely a big problem in America. Right now, the downtown was dead 5 years ago. Only few local restaurants were burning downtown, very few chains. And today's time, it looks like we are going to have like mega chain opening restaurant of 250 seats in the middle of downtown.
Wow.
Who I don't think is going to affect my business because of our business is really based on quality and also local products and also, you know, people who do care about their city. So it's completely different. So it's completely a different vision. But it's kind of a little disappointing to see that, you know, but
yeah.
But definitely Cincinnati, after 13 years, Cincinnati have wonderful place to eat. If it's going to be casual, fine dining Italian, if it's going to be, American casual dining or fine dining American, you have everything. And the cooks, they care, you know, and they care and they do as good of a good job sometimes than New York City, you know.
And where do you get most of your cooks from? From the local area or?
From the local area. I mean, you know, I mean, I think that's one of the biggest struggle probably we'll face, you know. Do you have many more restaurant opening and bigger, you know, social chain? I mean, it's a bit more difficult. Of course, and it's kind of also very difficult because when I'm not looking for cooks, I'm looking for culinarian. You know,
uh-huh.
I mean, you're looking for people who just don't want to work in a restaurant where they're just about doing the same thing every day. And it's more the matter of like getting the paycheck and then be able to be off, you know, and be able to be treated the right way. I think it's a bit more than that. It's culinary. It's people who want to see the product. They are pleased to create new dishes. They are happy to, I mean, even the chef, every chef of a restaurant are culinary and they are not cooks. I mean, they are, and even at the cafe where sometimes, you know, we could have cooks instead of being culinary, but still the most of the kitchen members are culinary and they're people. I mean, it's a simple sandwich made with a homemade pate, or it's a simple soup made with, you know, made from scratch. They still do care about it. It's just not like, you know. And so most of them are for the area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're buying products from local farmers as well?
I try to do that more and more and more. And I think, you know, it's just new. Of course, it's the new. You know, it's a big trend right now, which is actually very good. And of course, one of the things I will always say to farmers, you know, and if you can bring this message to every farmers have to understand they need to come and see the chef. You know,
yeah.
They need to come and see the chef. And I think that's something I try to teach to all of the farmers. If you don't go to the back door of the kitchen, don't expect the chef to go to the green market and buy everything from you, you know, because the chef may not have the time because of his business, because of his time he has to spend in the kitchen, or because his party the night before a little bit heavier and then cannot really be awake too early. And then when you go to the market, everything is gone, you know. But I think, you know, there's one thing I try to teach farmers is like, if you have products, come with the back of your truck in the kitchen. And I will not know any chef who will not buy most of the products from a truck.
Yeah.
It's right there. You know, I mean, because if you will not, I mean, you don't really care about what you put on a plate. And I think, you know, and I think for me, it's like, and I see that with some of my cooks, you know, some of the chefs from the other restaurant, from Jean Rowe, from the Bistro, and from Faux Paris and Greenup, when they have the farmer, my same farmers, you know, I told them, I cannot get all of their potatoes, I cannot get all of their herbs. So I say, go over there and go to, you know, Jerry or Chris or the chef, and when they go, they want to buy everything, you know, and even if the potatoes are going to be a bit more money, or if the green are going to be a bit more money, they are so excited, they want to buy everything, you know, and I think that's what I push the farmer to do. It's like, if you have products, if you want to sell products, if you need to sell the products to the commercial business to be able to be able to make a living and be able to produce a lot more, go in the back of the kitchen. And I don't know any chef who will not buy everything, because everybody gets passionate. I mean, you know, I may not have eggplant on my menu, but if you come and you bring me some beautiful Japanese eggplant who are gorgeous and, you know, they are, you know, and they just came out from your field a day ago, I'm going to buy them. I'm going to make a special with them, you know, and I'm going, you know, and then my excitement is going to push the waiter to sell it to the customer. And the excitement will go from, like, me buying from the, you know, the cooks buying from the farmer up to the customer eating them, you know.
Yeah, because I went to the green market last week, and I said, well, I haven't been here in so long. And, you know, the prices are a little bit high, but you get some incredible products. And it's so funny, because at Union Square, you cross the street and there's Whole Foods. And I kind of, like, laughed and said, wow, I could get really good quality stuff here. And yet I could go buy it simply at a big supermarket chain. But, you know, I'd prefer to help the farmer out.
Oh, yeah. But I think that's what the farmer has to be smarter, too. You know, I think farmer, I mean, we have a farmer, her name is Sally. And then, you know, and she understands that. And she's a... You know, she come and she ring the bell, and sometimes, of course, she come is like 7:30, 8 o'clock at night, and we are all in the service time. And but then someone always take time to go downstairs and shake what she have, and then we get excited and we try to buy as much than we can use, you know.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you realize, suddenly you're excited because you realize, oh, you don't have to buy the shy from a hemp farm in California tomorrow or next week, because she just give us some beautiful shy who are, like, you know. It tastes so much better because of the freshness, you know.
Yeah, they're local.
So, that's why it's amazing.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to definitely make a trip to Cincinnati.
Like, I wish to see you. I definitely wish to see you. I mean, you know.
I tell all my interviewees I'm going to have to come and visit you, so I'm going to have to travel all over the map now to visit
uh-huh.
you.
I hope to, yeah. I hope you do that. I mean, it's you know, it's a fun time. I mean, I'm sure you know. Are you into baseball?
No, I'm a bicycle rider, so. I'm a Mets fan, so, you know, I'm kind of a passive baseball fan, but,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So, you know, it's a huge bicycle trial here in Cincinnati, you know, where people come from everywhere and do the trial, so it's a nice,
okay.
It's fun.
Maybe I'll bring my bike then.
You never know, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jean-Robert.
You're very welcome, sir.
And,
I hope to talk to you soon.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, sir. Bye.
Well,
bye, Jeremy.
Bye.
Bye.